From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yes, it is about that time, folks. 1 p.m. has rolled around, and I am your host for this Current Sports on this February 18th, 2014. Folks, we have a ton to talk about, including, guess what our Top 5 Tuesday is today? You know how before every single game here in America, you have to sing the national anthem. It is a sign for our incredible country that we live in, the home of the brave, land of the free. And you know what? There have been many outstanding renditions of the national anthem, but you know what? There have been some bad ones as well. Yes. And today's Top 5 Tuesday, we are going to have a lot of fun with this one as we list the top 5 worst renditions of the national anthem. Yes, it's going to be a pretty funny one. It might hurt your ears a little bit. You might have to turn down Current Sports once we play a few of these bites, but it's going to be a fun one nonetheless. And also, folks, later on in the show, we invite Brian Calloway, sports writer of the Lansing State Journal, to join me as we talk a little MSU women's basketball as they head down the stretch of their season with only 4 games left. Folks, they sit in second place in the Big Ten Conference, tied with Nebraska, Penn State. Of course, they are a juggernaut at number 1 in the conference. But Brian, of course, he is that's his beat. He will be right here on the show joining us as we dive into Susie Merchant and her squad season. And of course, later on, we'll talk a little Pistons. And as they start, they're coming off the All-Star break. The All-Star weekend is in the books now, folks. And we now ask, how will the Pistons finish the second half of the season? Are they smelling the playoffs, or will this be another dud? They start the season off tonight, the second half of the season, excuse me, against the Charlotte Bobcats, a doubleheader, one tonight and tomorrow. And also, Tom Izzo yesterday had some interesting insights concerning guard Keith Appling and his health. And there is a possibility that we may not see Keith Appling until the postseason starts and the madness of March ensues. What do you think about that? Is shutting down Keith Appling a good idea? Again, we're opening up our phone lines as we do each and every show, just about every show, throughout this entire hour. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on anything, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. You know what? An interesting story that occurred, I believe, about this morning, 9 a.m. this morning, when concerning Mike Ditka. Of course, Mike Ditka, a former Bears, coach and Saints head coach. He's a legend, folks. Mike Ditka is a true legend. You know, he made some interesting comments concerning Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford, of course, Detroit Lions quarterback. He's a big fan. Now, Ditka did not hold back and said, "Hey, I'm a huge fan of Matthew Stafford. I love his talent. He, you know, he just has to get more accurate when he throws the football." Now, you know, many times you see Matt warming up in his pregame routine or even after the game in the locker room. Yeah, if you know, this is something I also want to ask, you know, all of you out there who listen to Current Sports, because I've had countless conversations about this topic as well, concerning the way you wear your baseball cap. Now, Matthew Stafford, you know, he's known for wearing his cap backwards, you know, during pregame warm-ups and after the game. It's kind of one of his mantras to Matt. And Ditka doesn't like it at all. Now, this is what Ditka said. Quote, "I think he can make all throws." Now, this is what he told the Free Press, the Detroit Free Press. "He's a smart kid. I wish he'd put the baseball cap on frontwards instead of backwards all the time." He also went on to, you know, talk more about it. He really harped on him putting his cap backwards. You know what? If you remember Colin Kaepernick, when they were eliminated throughout this year's playoffs, of course, Colin Kaepernick, quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, Colin wore his hat backwards during a post-game interview, and Twitter just exploded. You know, why would you wear your cap backwards, Colin Kaepernick? I mean, you know, show some respect, at least put it on forwards. You know, I have a pretty interesting story, man. When I was an intern, and Fred Heumann, my former boss at Channel 6, he actually texted me this morning once he heard Ditka make these comments. When I was a former intern at Channel 6, this was my junior year of college. I was a fresh intern at Channel 6 News. It was about my first or second week. I was there with Fred, Lisa, and Lisa Byington and Pat Titi. And I used to wear my cap backwards all the time, folks, all the time. Whenever I was covering a game, a sporting event, if I was at the baseball field, you know, covering high school soccer, wherever I was, it was the summertime. I was a summer intern. You know, I love to wear caps, especially in the summertime. I used to rock my cap backwards. Now, apparently, there were many folks who saw me wearing my cap backwards, and a call came in to Channel 6, a few calls actually, and said, "Hey, what's wrong with your intern? He's rocking his hat backwards. I don't know if I like that, man. Tell him to put his hat back on, you know, put his hat forwards." And Fred actually pulled me to the side and had to talk with me and said, "Hey, Al, you know, I don't even let my son wear his cap backwards. And we would like it if you wear your cap forwards. It's only, you know, you can do it when you leave here. But when you're at Channel 6, could you rock your cap forwards? Because we don't like it backwards. We're getting complaints." Interesting stuff. Now, you know, I've had this debate many times with many, many people. Now, you know what? I don't wear my cap backwards. I don't do it. It's something I just kind of, you know, after being at Channel 6 and going to Channel 6 all the time, and when I will wear a cap, I will wear forwards all the time. I just kind of got in the habit of wearing it forwards. But I really don't know if I see a huge problem with it if you're not in a professional setting. I do see where people could be coming from if you are in a professional setting, if you're representing a station or something like that, or if you're a quarterback out there rocking your cap backwards. But to each his own. I want to debate that with Alex and Matt and kind of get their opinion on it, because I feel as though it's kind of an old school mentality, you know what I mean, as far as what side you wear the cap. But I definitely want to dive into that a little bit and get your thoughts on that too, because countless athletes out there have taken a lot of criticism for rocking their cap sideways or backwards. So, all right. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on anything. Before we dive into our Top 5 Tuesday, which is the top 5 worst national anthem renditions of all time. That's going to be a good one. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this February 18th, 2014. Well, the Detroit Pistons, again, they get back to business tonight after the All-Star break. They will take on the Charlotte Bobcats at home tonight, 7:30 p.m., and then play Charlotte once again tomorrow on the road. That one at 7 p.m. And very, very cool news here. Folks, there will be a Bad Boys reunion. You remember the Bad Boys back in the 80s, you know, Bill Laimbeer, Joe Dumars, Isaiah Thomas. I mean, Rick Mahorn, Dennis Rodman. I mean, those guys were great. I mean, probably the most popular era in Detroit Pistons history. But there will be a Bad Boys reunion. All of those players will be coming back and reuniting during the Miami Heat and Detroit Pistons game at the Palace of Auburn Hills in March. Definitely looking forward to that one. Just giving you guys a heads up, that will certainly be a hot, hot ticket. All right, and University of Michigan head coach Brady Hoke now may be called the, this is very weird, quote, Jay Ira and Nikki Harris family head football coach. That may now be his official name and title with the university. Again, the Jay Ira and Nikki Harris family head football coach. Now, the first Michigan coaching endowment will be voted on Thursday at the University of Michigan Regents. In the letter to the Regents, the head coach is described as someone who passes along, quote, the rich history of tradition. Of course, Ira and the Harris family, well, the Harris family in general, excuse me, are huge donors to the University of Michigan, and that's why this change could possibly be made. It's pretty weird. That's pretty interesting, too. The Jay Ira and Nikki Harris family head football coach. All right. Former Ohio State offensive lineman Marcus Hall, he is capitalizing off the highest profile moment of his career. Remember the double bird salute? Yeah, the double bird salute, flipping the birds to thousands of fans at Michigan Stadium. Hall, who is hoping to make the NFL this spring, is signing photos of that moment, that ceremonious exit from the Ohio State 42-41 win over Michigan this past November. Hall was held out of the Big Ten championship game the following week for those actions, which saw him ejected from the rivalry game before his quote-unquote salute. So he's signing autographs of that photo for cash. Interesting stuff there. All right, the latest of Mark Hollis's high-profile basketball events will include a special event with an MSU legend. Now, the event, which will see four teams, Michigan State, Texas, North Carolina, and Florida, play three games each in three different cities. Now, after stops in New York, Chicago, the event heads to the West Coast for games at the Staples Center in L.A. Now, the L.A. swing will include a dinner at MSU legend Magic Johnson's house. Man, I would love to be a fly on the wall for that dinner. Oh, my goodness. Hollis wanted to say, quote, it's a chance for student-athletes to be a part of some of the special things that are in three of the biggest cities in the country. Not only, and this is what he went on to say as well, not only will they be playing basketball, but they'll be doing some cultural, educational things and sharing a few meals together, one hosted by Magic Johnson. How cool is that? Also, Merrill Davis and Charlie White are loving life in Sochi, folks. After winning a bronze medal in the team event, the pair captured the first American ice dancing gold medal with a nearly flawless performance. Their 116.63 points in the free dance gave them a finishing score of 195.52. That's 4 points better than Canadian competitors Teresa Virtue and Scott Moore, who trained with the U.S. pair in Detroit. Now, Davis and White had won silver in 2010 Vancouver Games and have skated together since 1997. And get this, folks, they're from Michigan. How about that? Congrats to Merrill Davis and Charlie White. Such a tremendous accomplishment. That's certainly tough to do, and they are the first to do it. All right, the Slim Reaper is gone, folks. In a sit-down with Bill Simmons, the NBA All-Star, Kevin Durant told Simmons that his nickname is, this is a pretty interesting nickname, the Servant, and no longer wants to be called the Slim Reaper. So Durant also went on to say, quote, I just like to serve everybody, my teammates, ushers at the game, and fans. I don't know if I'm digging the servant. Maybe that has to grow on me. All right. And 3 days after deactivating his social media account following the Ted Wells report, Martin returned and said, quote, I apologize for acting like a big baby these past few days. This has been so much for me and my family. I just want to play football. This is Richie Incognito discussed straight to, you know, talking about Jonathan Martin and, of course, everything that went down this past summer with them. Incognito took down his Twitter account Friday saying, goodbye, Twitter. See you on the other side. So now he's apologizing. So there you have that. All right. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you can call in at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527 and share what's on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky now join me. Matt, welcome back, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Al. How are you guys doing?
I'm very, very well. We have a special top five. I'm excited about this top five Tuesday, guys. The top five worst, absolutely just terrible national anthem renditions of all time. We're going to kick off our show with this very, very fun segment. I'm excited about it. I guess I'll kick it off, guys. Let's dive right into it. You know what? I'm going to go R. Kelly on you guys. Now, R. Kelly actually held this national anthem before a boxing match. And you know what? On every list, on tons of lists, when I was researching this on the, you know, the worst national anthems of all time, R. Kelly made many of this list. Now, me personally, when you hear it, I'm a fan of R. Kelly's music. I kind of dig this rendition of it. But, you know, I reserve my thoughts until after this. Just play that real quick, Aaron.
Oh, sweet. So proudly we hailed by the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched.
I kind of dig that, man. I was bobbing my head, tapping my foot. I don't know, but you know what? This is what made it bad, though. I mean, this is the reason why I think it made a lot of people's list. If you look, now people can't see this because of course, just the audio, we're just over the radio. He had two people, a man and a woman, ballroom dancing in the middle of the ring as he was singing. I don't know about that, Kills. I'm not feeling that one. But overall, I thought it was a very, very personalized rendition of the national anthem, and I kind of dug it. I don't know.
Not only was it personalized, Al, but that was groovy. That was groovy,
man. You feel me on that? I really digged it. I liked it.
I wouldn't call it the worst. I liked it.
I liked it too.
It's a little bit reminiscent of that Marvin Gaye clip we played last week, I believe. Except, I don't know. R. Kelly is a, you know, hugely successful artist, but I don't think he has kind of the cultural cachet that a Marvin Gaye could, you know, did. So that, you know, he could do that. He could change the arrangement of the national anthem and people would like it. Ooh. I don't know if R. Kelly was there. I think that's why it's on those lists of maybe worst anthems.
I don't know. I was kind of feeling the groove on that one. I don't know. All right, but that definitely made a lot of people's list. Next is Carl Lewis. Now, Carl Lewis, this one is just bad, guys, because actually in the middle of him singing the national anthem, he just totally stops because he screws up a note. Just listen to this.
Oh, say can you see, and the rockets red flag. Now.
Yeah, he totally stops in the middle. I mean, he couldn't hit that note. It's a tough note to hit. He totally messes up the note and then he says, "Uh-oh, I'm going to make up for it now." Oh my gosh, that is hilarious. I die laughing.
That's the best part. I will make up for it now.
Yes.
But he doesn't. So
yes, that one is totally hilarious to me. I crack up. And it's a funny clip. You go to YouTube and YouTube that clip. There's two sports center anchors who are trying to anchor the whole thing. I'm like, all right, listen to this. And they come back. They can't compose themselves. They are dying laughing on air, cannot contain themselves to finish reading the script. Oh, it's great stuff. Next for me, guys, has to, you know, this one has a local feel to it. Mo Cheeks, actually, this is before a game. This is when he was coaching back in the day. And a young lady went up and, you know, started to perform the national anthem. And in the middle of her singing, she forgets the words and totally becomes just totally off her game. Mo Cheeks, being the classy guy that he is, comes over, grabs the mic, and helps her sing and finish the song. It was a great moment. Listen to this.
Stars last gleaming. Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. Oh, the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming.
How about that? Mo Cheeks, a classy, classy move there. I mean, he may no longer be the Pistons head coach.
Maybe miss him a little bit.
Yeah, I know, right? You know, that was a very talking about Mo Cheeks really quickly. Do you guys, you know, reminiscing on that moment, him being fired and let go by the Pistons, do you guys think he deserved, you know, a little longer? No?
Well, the worst part is that they were winning. Is that they were winning when he got fired. So I say if you do fire him, at least fire him when they lose a game.
Do you think they should have fired him?
I think they should have, yeah.
Yeah, but you still stick with it.
But when they lose a game, not when they're on a winning streak.
Matt,
I don't think they ever should have hired him in the first place.
I knew that.
If anything, that clip shows that he is willing to help people when they're down. You know, it doesn't matter who's watching. If he sees somebody in trouble, he's going to do what he can to bail them out.
Right.
So, you know, at the very least, he's a stand-up guy.
He's a classic.
You could argue that he bailed out Joe Dumars, maybe. Maybe that was it. Maybe
it's going to take a lot for that time. All right, another one. Now, Alex, you actually showed me this one yesterday, and it definitely makes my list. This is from Harper Gruzin. She is an 11-year-old who performed at the Los Angeles Galaxy Los Angeles Galaxy MLS match. I forgot who they're playing, but this one was pretty, pretty bad. Listen to this one.
Say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
Yeah, that one, you know how, you know, the national anthem's going on and, you know, the TV broadcasts are panning to different individuals, the players and the fans as it's going on. You should see some of the reactions from that one, guys. Oh, my goodness. That one's pretty bad. And last but certainly not least, Roseanne Barr. Just listen. My if that doesn't make your number one, guys, I'm very curious to see what you guys have at number one. That just sounded like my mom was yelling at me to take out the trash back in high school. That was so bad. Oh, my goodness. That's what my list looks like, Matt. What do you got, man?
That's a tough one to top. Calling that singing is a real stretch.
That's yelling.
Let's get back to it. All right. I have a couple. There's some criteria that I look at when I'm judging a national anthem and seeing how bad it is. Singing ability is obviously important. And,
right.
You know, Roseanne clearly takes the cake there because she is.
Who
you know,
hired
the
her
inability.
To sing that?
Exactly.
That's
terrible. The thing. But at the same time, you know, she's not a singer. You know, clearly they knew going in,
right.
This probably isn't going to end well. You know, it would have been a Susan Boyle moment had she just come out and, you know, rocked the mic and left everybody jaws dropped. But other than that, just the size of the stage, you know, where you're singing. Is it the Super Bowl or is it a minor league baseball game? You know, I feel like that makes a difference because, you know, the visibility is going to play a large part in how it gets remembered. And then knowing the lyrics.
You got to know
it's a
lyrics.
Tough song to sing. Let's not kid ourselves. Mm-hmm. But you got to know the words.
You live in America, man.
You
come
have
on,
to
brother.
Know the words.
Yeah.
It's incredibly important. All right. Number five, I guess. I'm going to have a tie because this is another one of my big pet peeves. This is between Christina Aguilera at Super Bowl 45 and Alicia Keys at Super Bowl 47. And one of the big problems I have
I
with the national
too,
anthem.
Man. They are great singers.
Super talented singers. A little bit too much diva in the national anthem. Mm-hmm. And if there's one song that should be, you know, steer clear of all, you know, diva-ing, I guess, it's the national anthem.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to draw it out. Here's Alicia Keys, the last line of the song.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
See what I mean?
That was too. That was in the home, living in the home. Come
you
on,
you
man.
Don't
you don't
that.
Need that.
We know where
you're
it
not
is.
Not Whitney Houston.
You know, it's
Whitney
the home
can
of
do
it.
That, but Alicia Keys, come on now, chill a little bit.
That was almost 40 seconds. The song in its entirety took 156 seconds, the longest in Super Bowl history. At
wow.
that point, you don't know if people are cheering because she did such a good job or because they're just glad it's over.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's like, and if you get to that point, you've sung for too long. So that's my number five. Number four, I'm going to have Michael Bolton at a Red Sox-Yankees game in 2003. During the middle of the song, you hear a clear pause while he is checking
his hand
for the lyrics.
Terrible.
And the crowd sees it. They all react. Everybody knows Bolton's busted.
Yep.
Number three, oh boy. You know, let's just play it.
Yeah, that's
pretty
bad.
I mean, we give
that's yelling too.
We give Roseanne grief, but she is not a singer. Steven Tyler from Aerosmith is, you know, a platinum-selling artist, and he is shrieking the national anthem. So Steven Tyler is my number three. Number two, it's got to be Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
Let's spare the listeners, not play it again. And
right.
number one, we'll keep in the hole here because it's actually Alex's number one as well.
Is it? Okay.
So we'll wait until Alex shows his list, and then we'll play it for everybody. But man, it's a doozy.
That was a good list. And you know what? Michael Bolton, too. You know, when that moment happened when he's singing and he looks blatantly.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he stops and says, okay. And then I'm like, dude, did he really just do that? I couldn't believe he did that. Unbelievable. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, no, some great criteria. The only criteria I really added with this is I don't like debauchery. I don't like, what's her name, Roseanne? Because she naturally just wasn't a good singer.
Yeah.
I think that you should only talk about attempted national anthems, from actual singers. So, my number five, I have Harper Gurzon.
Who makes up that criteria?
Well, no. I mean,
singers, and then your number five is an 11-year-old girl?
No. But the Roseanne
Alex, you
girl?
Kill me. You kill me.
No,
I'm calling you out.
Roseanne,
you kill me with this every week with these crazy criterias. for, okay, this is the criteria for this. This is like last week. I'm going to call you out again with the whole Beyonce. You got mad because I, well, both of you guys got mad at me because I put Beyonce and Jay-Z.
I'm totally on Alex's side in that one.
No, well, I put Beyonce and Jay-Z on the top couples of all time for Valentine's Day. But go ahead. You're killing with these criteria.
No.
But okay, go ahead.
Roseanne is just not a good singer. At least this 11-year-old girl attempted to sing. Is what I'm saying.
Okay. Roseanne did too, which is bad.
Yeah, but okay. Number five, Harper Gruzins, like I showed yesterday.
Yep.
Natalie Gilbert with Mo Cheeks is my number four. Michael Bolton with the lyrics on the palm and the echo was bad too. Carl Lewis at number two, and number one, let's roll it.
Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous
Yeah, if that's not number one, I don't know what else. What else is out?
Goodness, I didn't. Who was that?
Alexis Norman in a minor league hockey game, Halifax, Portland, and this girl had the audience.
Wow.
The audience and the fans, they had to finish it with her.
Yeah.
Never have I ever seen that. Ever.
She didn't know anything. She didn't know the word. I don't understand how you can go up to the mic. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you've been preparing for quite a long time because you're about to sing the national anthem in front of thousands and hundreds of people here.
No, well,
and you don't know the words.
With someone with performing experience,
that's crazy.
Sometimes when you get up on stage in front of tons of people, you just have a flash and you just forget it. It's not that you don't know
the
words.
The national anthem?
In her defense, she's Canadian.
I was just about to bring it up. I mean, she's
a singer. So it's
she
not
sounded
like
she didn't even, she's not even from this country.
Exactly. And honestly, she knew the last two lines, so she was probably watching that video of the Alicia Keys performance and only had time to watch the last line because she knew Home of the Brave.
Yeah, she knew Home of the Brave. She nailed that ending. Yes.
The middle section got a little dicey. And when she starts to, circle back and sing lyrics over, and you can hear the crowd go, that's never a reaction you want.
Right. This is the national anthem here. And I understand, Alex, I could see if there's some other song. Of course, you get nervous. You're in front of a lot of people. But the national anthem, I can sing the national anthem off the top of my head and don't even have to think about the lyrics. I mean, it's that ingrained in our culture. But I don't know.
Even the funny part is after that, she sang the Canadian anthem, and she screwed that up a little bit too. So.
Wow.
That was funny, too. That was also funny.
Interesting stuff. All right, guys. That's a very, very good list. I hope we didn't hurt your ears too bad on this this afternoon. Let's take the break. When we come back, we are going to talk a little Pistons. How will the Detroit Pistons finish the second half of the season? And is shutting down Keith Abling a good idea? And how would that affect the team? Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. Well, that was a fun Top 5 Tuesday, wasn't it, guys? That was fun. The Top 5 Worst National Anthem Renditions of All Time. Remind you all, we are taking your calls throughout this entire hour. If you want to call in and give us your thoughts on anything, any of the sporting action that's coming up, so much to talk about. You know the number, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Go to our Facebook page as well, facebook.com/currentsports, and tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Also want to remind you all that Current Sports TV tapes tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow, folks. I will be sitting down with one of the most revered coaches in the Mid-Michigan area. His St. John's wrestling team is great every single year. Just a powerhouse, folks. They will be going to states and competing for another state championship title. Derek Phillips, the head coach of the St. John's wrestling team, will be joining me. Again, if you want to be a part of that live audience, just sign up totally free. It's always a great time each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. at the WKAR-TV studios here on the campus of Michigan State University in the Communication Arts and Sciences building. Simply do so by signing up for free at WKAR.org. All right. Well, as the MSU women's basketball season winds down, with just four games left to try and make a run at that top spot in the Big Ten, they will ride some momentum into this Thursday's night game at Wisconsin. Now, coming off a 70-49 whooping of Ohio State this past Saturday at the Breslin Center, they currently sit in second place of the Big Ten, tied with Nebraska at 9-3. Now, Penn State is still holding down that top spot at an impressive 11-2 record in the Big Ten Conference. Today, I welcome my brother from another mother, LSJ sports writer Brian Callaway, to Current Sports. Brian, how you doing?
I'm not bad, Al. How you doing?
My man, Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today. Now, Brian, I mean, they did a nice job. This MSU women's basketball team did a nice job bouncing back from that loss to Nebraska to complete dominance over Ohio State. Now with four games left, as I just mentioned, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Northwestern, and Indiana, all teams that are ranked seventh or lower in the conference, that definitely bides well for this team. What are your thoughts on their chances of possibly making a run at this thing?
Oh, no, they have a very good chance at making a run at this thing. I mean, one of the things that's kind of key for this team is they need to play together on offense. I mean, sometimes there's points in the season where they've got too individualistic, as of what Susie Merchant says, and it kind of costs them in games where, you know, they kind of are just, you know, kind of out for their own, and each person kind of going out there and, you know, just jacking up shots as opposed to kind of running the offense and the ball movements. And those things have cost them at times this season. It's cost them, and they actually lost to Illinois at home earlier this season, and Illinois is at the bottom of the standings. So, I mean, just because they played these the teams in the lower half of the conference, there's no guarantees, there's no gimmies, and this Big Ten has kind of been wild at times this year. But they have a strong chance to you know, make a strong run here if they get the necessary help from someone beating Penn State.
Yes, that is so true. And, you know, Brian, you talk about that. You know, it's something weird because, you know, looking at, you know, Susie's teams in the past, especially last year and the year before that, I mean, they pride themselves on moving the ball around and getting ball movement. You haven't seen too much one-on-one play. But, again, you just like you alluded to, we've seen that at times during games this season, that one-on-one type of street ball just jacking up shots from time to time. I mean, how surprising was that for you? I mean, seeing is the history that this team has had and how it prides itself on getting everyone involved.
Oh, it's a little bit different, especially, you know, Susie Merchant, you know, a defensive-minded coach, and all of a sudden you have these talented freshmen that come into the mix that are very good offensive players and can kind of create their own shots. Obviously, you know, Ariel Powers has been huge for this team this year, and, you know, she can pretty much get to the hoop anytime she wants for the most part. And then, you know, Tori Jankowska, I mean, she really has – her range has no limit, and she's willing to shoot from anywhere on the court and can hit some pretty deep threes. So, I mean – you add those offensive-minded players into the mix with players that maybe aren't necessarily accustomed to that. I mean, that kind of changes the dynamic of this team a little bit. And, you know, Susie Merchant has kind of talked about that, you know, with this team being so offensive-minded, it kind of maybe caused her to kind of have some lapses on the defensive end earlier in the year when this team wasn't playing that well defensively. Now they've kind of shifted that around, and that's kind of keyed what they've been able to do in Big Ten play. I mean, they started up 4-0 in the conference, largely because of what they were able to do defensively when they beat, you know, three of the four teams they faced by more than 10 points. So it's definitely kind of been a surprise, but, I mean, you have these offensive-minded freshmen to the mix, and they don't necessarily need a play to get their shots. I mean, they can kind of score when they want to. So, I mean, that this is something that's just been a little bit different for this team.
Yes, that is so, so true. I mean, you get, again, Jankowska and, of course, Ariel Powers. I mean, they have been spectacular. And like you said, Brian, they can definitely create their own shots when they need to. Now, another interesting dynamic that has recently occurred over the past week or so, Kiana Johnson, of course, point guard for the MSU women's basketball team. She has been suspended indefinitely. Of course, Kiana has had her troubles in the past with staying eligible for the team, suspended in the past for receiving benefits, Now she has been suspended. I don't think Susie's making any more comment on it. She's really kind of keeping it under wraps on what exactly happened. But, you know, Brian, looking at, you know, how this affects this team on the court, in what way does her absence hinder this team?
Oh, it hinders the team quite a bit. I mean, Kiana Johnson has been pretty much their primary ball handler the last 3 years when she's on the court, and they don't have that right now. And it oftentimes leads to a little bit more turnovers than, you know, you kind of like to see from your team. It's just, I mean, her absence has kind of shifted Clarissa Bell and Jankowska into some more, you know, ball handling roles. And they're not necessarily as comfortable with those roles as she was in handling that pressure. And, I mean, you've seen teams that have played them while Jackson's been out try to kind of, you know, trap them and create that pressure just to kind of force turnovers. And it's worked at times, too, because, I mean, they don't really have that true commanding point guard presence. And, you know, one thing about Kiana as well, too, is when she's in there, I mean, Susie doesn't have to worry about her. You know, she can get them in the set. She can get them in the right plays because she's got that veteran presence. She's got the experience. I mean, she's ran the show for 3 years now, so she kind of knows, you know, where people need to be and, you know, kind of get things going on offense when the team is stagnant. So they don't have that right now. Mm. And then if she doesn't return, you know, before the end of the season, that's something that maybe can hurt them down the road, not having, you know, that primary ball handling guard.
Do you think they could win the Big Ten without her?
I think they have as good a chance as anyone. I mean, they've been able to win some games without her recently here. And, I mean, if Ariel Powers comes to play and Tori Jankowska, I mean, I think those two players are really the big X factors for this team. I mean, just because this team often goes is how they go. I mean, they're two of their three leading scorers of the season. And when they have good games, I mean, this team is awfully tough to beat. And also, I mean, when they have the post presence, too. I mean, when Becca Mills or Jasmine Hines is going down low, I mean, this team has a lot of different weapons they can go to offensively to get points.
Yes, that is so true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with sports writer for the Lansing State Journal, Brian Calloway. Now, Brian, you know, something that Susie talks about every single year, especially around this time and this month, is the February fight. Here is Susie addressing the media this week at her weekly presser.
I don't know. I've always kind of believed that. I mean, I know people talk about the grind and all that, and it is. I mean, it's a long year, but I just think if you want to be a championship team, you want to win a championship, you got to fight in February. You know, you got to dig a little deeper than the guy in front of you. So I've always kind of believed that. This is a stage in the season, and it usually happens the last 3 weeks of February there. For us, our tournament's a week earlier than the men, so a lot is defined in those last few weeks of the season. So I've always kind of believed in that February fight mentality. Fighters usually win.
Brian, since you've been covering this MSU women's basketball team and, you know, in the past and looking at around this time each year in February, I mean, how much do you think this team overall, not even just looking at this year, but how much have you seen this team respond into, turning up their play, if you will, in the month of February?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, right this month, I mean, they've won 3 of their 4 games, with the only loss being to Nebraska. I mean, they had a big win over Purdue to kind of start the month, and that was just kind of big for the Big Ten race. And, you know, if you look at last year, what this team did, too, I mean, last year, Jasmine Thomas was their point guard. She kind of stepped up in February, and she really mounted a strong finish to her career. And, mm-hmm. I mean, the same could be said maybe with Annalise Crickwell. She's having her best season of her career as a senior right now. And, you know, just had a pretty big game in this one over Ohio State. And, I mean, she's been a person that's really kind of willed the team to victory. And I could see her being that person that's kind of, you know, makes that strong late surge as her career is about to end and kind of leads this team in, you know, the late stages of the season. And, I mean, Susie has had a pretty good track record in February since she's been leading this Michigan State program. And they've had a lot of success in this month. So, I mean, yeah, this February fight thing that Susie has is pretty much held true. Our players have kind of adapted that mentality and responded to that. And, I mean, you often hear them talking about the February fight, too, and how, you know, these last few months and the grind of the season and how tough it is. But, yeah, her players have definitely responded to that, and you've kind of seen that success play out on the court since she's been here in East Lansing.
Yes, that is so true. And I believe Jasmine is overseas playing now, right?
Yes, she is, and she's having success. She's over in Israel, and she's had some pretty big games for them. I mean, there's 3 of the Susie's former players that are kind of overseas playing right now. Jasmine Thomas, Kalisha Keene is playing over in Israel too, as well as Mackendra Johnson is having some success overseas as well.
Wow, that's got to be a culture shock, I tell you, going from East Lansing to Israel, man. Now, Brian, you know something else has really been eye-popping for me. I mean, you know, when you go into the Breslin Center at a women's basketball game, especially if you look at this past weekend's game, you know, the crowds that have been there at the Breslin have been so impressive. Some of the best crowds that I've seen in quite some time for a MSU women's basketball game. I mean, what is accounted for that?
Well, they've really done a good job branching out into the community and, you know, getting the word out about their program and kind of, you know, getting, you know, young kids and families. I believe Susie has the, I think it's MVP club where a lot of kids, where they have, you know, kids get a, they have certain kids that come to the game and they, you know, get to stand at half court and get greeted by the starters. And they just have all sorts of things that kind of cater to the community. I mean, this past Saturday's game against Ohio State was their, pink zone game where, you know, they honored raising money for breast cancer. And then they've had a 4-H game earlier this year where they had a whole bunch of 4-H groups at the game and they had Girl Scouts games. So they've done a good job marketing and getting their word out into the community. And it also helps, you know, when you have a good product to sell. And this team's been playing pretty well in Big Ten, obviously tied for second place. So that always helps matters as well too. But I think they've really done a good job reaching out to their fan base. And when you look at women's basketball, so it's kind of a different fan base than, you know, men's basketball, just because it's not the above the rim. I mean, it's kind of like the older generation and the families where it's, you know, really affordable just to take your kids to the Breslin Center and watch a women's basketball game. And if you think about it, you're going to have a lot better seats usually for a women's basketball game as opposed to a men's game where you're likely in a lower bowl. Tickets are easier to get as well too. So I just really think they've done a really good job marketing this program out there and getting the word out about them. And like I said, it also helps when they're playing well.
Yes, an outstanding marketing team, to say the least. Now, you know, and Brian, when you travel and cover this team on the road, I mean, comparing the atmosphere that you see at the Breslin and have been seeing, especially these past few games, comparing them to other schools, especially in the Big Ten Conference, I mean, is that dynamic pretty vast, or do you see other venues also packing out or coming close to packing out arenas?
From what I've seen, like, I was in Notre Dame earlier this year. Now, that was a pretty impressive environment. Now, obviously, that's a top five team in the nation. And
at Notre Dame?
Had a good, yeah.
Yeah,
had a good
Skylar Diggins, yeah.
Record. Yeah, they've had a good track record over the past two decades. But MSU's women's basketball, SID, Jim Donatelli, was actually showing me a picture of when they were at Illinois a couple of weeks ago. And the crowd was very sparse on a Wednesday night there. And it doesn't seem like other programs kind of get the attendance that that Michigan State does. I know Penn State draws well, Purdue draws well, and those are programs that have had success. Nebraska draws well as well, too. But I mean, I think not a lot of programs around the Big Ten can kind of compare to, you know, what Michigan State has done. And Michigan State's annually kind of ranked in the top 15 nationally in attendance for the past, you know, several years, too. So, I mean, they kind of built a nice fan base, and it kind of started back, you know, back to when Coach McCauley was here leading the program when she started recruiting the local kids, and, you know, that brought some of the local people into the stands and kind of built off that, you know, because they went to the Final Four under her, and that kind of, you know, sparked, you know, some interest in the program as well, too. So all that little stuff has kind of helped build, you know, their fan base. And, you know, Susie Merchant talked about it after Saturday's game, having appreciation for the people who come before her kind of helped elevate this program to where it's at and the exposure that it started to get.
Right, that is so true. And and you know, success breeds tickets. I tell you that, success definitely breeds tickets. And you know what? all right, Brian, so they're on the road against Wisconsin this Thursday. What kind of team is Wisconsin? What are you expecting from that game?
Well, Wisconsin actually gave them a little bit of trouble when they visited the Breslin Center late last month, and they have a transfer from UConn, Michaela Johnson, who had a huge game against Michigan State. I believe she scored 25 or 26 points in the first meeting and had 19 of those in the first half. And she's a post player, and they really had a problem stopping her down low. So, I mean, she could present a challenge for them, and, I mean, they'll definitely need better post defense in order to come away with success in that game. And, I mean, that's one of those teams in the lower half of the Big Ten that, you know, Susie Merchant kind of touched on yesterday that you just really can't take lightly. And, I mean, they're dangerous teams. And there was a four-point game at the Breslin Center when those two teams played before. So, I mean, that's a game they can't overlook at all. And, I mean, the Johnson girl is really talented. Obviously, she was at UConn for some time and what that program's done. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough tough game for them, not going to be easy, and that Wisconsin team has kind of given some other teams fits in the Big Ten, even though they haven't won those games, but they're a dangerous team.
Yes, without a doubt. Again, that's Thursday in Madison, Wisconsin, a 9 p.m. tip for that one. All right, Brian. Well, you know what? Before I also, you know, I ran into you at the press conference not too long ago, and you know what? You have hopped on the fitness train with me and have gotten a membership at Planet Fitness at Meridian Mall. How have you been sticking to the workouts, brother?
Oh, definitely, definitely, man. I haven't seen you there yet. I've seen Audrey like three days in a row.
Get out.
I haven't seen
yeah, really?
I saw Audrey Dahlgren from WLNS 3 days in a row at the gym, three random different times. So I'm waiting to see you there, man.
You know what? See, I'm like Batman. I only go late at night. You'll see me when I'm done with the day. I go around at least probably around 11 or 12 at night. So, yeah, okay. If you come at late, we'll definitely have to work out together one day, Brian.
All right, for sure, man.
All right, thanks a lot. There you have it. Brian Callaway, sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Pistons. And is shutting down Keith Abling a good idea for the MSU men's basketball team? Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec.
Well, I've been taking my time. Slow going's
nothing. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. Let's talk a little Pistons, guys. Alex, have you been sticking to your? I think you got a membership at Planet Fitness too, brother.
I do. I have not been sticking with it that much.
You haven't? I fell off this past week. Valentine's weekend kind of threw me off, and haven't worked out in a week. Going tonight.
Yep. We got to have what's his name on there? The personal trainer that we had on.
Big guy. You mean Mike Ball?
Mike Ball.
Mike Ball of Snap Fitness. Well, formerly of Snap Fitness. Yeah, it'll be years before I get to his size. But all right, guys. Well, the Detroit Pistons, they are back in action now after the All-Star break. All-Star weekend just wrapped up, and they return to action against the Charlotte Bobcats, who the Pistons are fighting with in that eighth spot right now. Charlotte has the final spot in the East as it sits right now at 23-30. Oh, my goodness, that's so bad to say. 23-30. Detroit is 22-30. So they have a back-to-back series with them tonight and tomorrow night on the road at Charlotte. Tonight's is at home at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Real simple question, guys. How do you think the Pistons are going to finish the second half of the season, and will they make the playoffs? I'll leave it up to you.
To end the first half, they came out angry. That last game was just an angry game. Drummond was out blocking shots left and right, looking at the All-Star game and the young stars game for Drummond winning that.
He was great, wasn't he?
MVP, yeah. Well, I think there's two different predictions here. If they stick with their temporary coach right now, I say that they do pretty well. I say that they'll make the playoffs at least.
So you like Lawyer?
I like Lawyer. If they hire a new coach, I mean, as Matt said, they shouldn't have hired Cheeks in the first place. I think that if they hire a new coach at this point, it would screw up the chemistry too much. I think they just have to stick with Lawyer.
I think when you look at the dynamic of this team right now, again, they finished the that first half pretty strong. Of course, granted, the last game they played Cleveland, they lost to Cleveland 93-89, but they won three of their last four games. You know, look pretty decent, and it seems as though this team is sick and tired of hearing, you know, just the chatter left and right around the league. Of course, you had Charles Barkley not too long ago calling the Pistons idiots. He called them idiots, for goodness sake. The Pistons definitely hear this. Don't get it twisted. I think that the players are definitely frustrated with what's been, you know, what's ensued throughout this season. I mean, of course, with their head coach being fired and let go. I mean, and the drama that comes with that. And, of course, these last few years, they haven't been great in I don't know how long. It's a lot of frustration in D-Town right now. And I think they have the personnel and the players that realize that frustration and are going to fight their butts off to try and make the playoffs. Granted, it helps, again, I keep saying this, because they're in the Eastern Conference, which is a terrible, terrible conference right now. Again, I mean, I just gave you the standings. I mean, these two teams, Charlotte and Detroit, they're in the, you know, fighting for the eighth spot, and they're well below 500 right now. But I do think the Pistons will finish strong. I like Lawyer, too. I like his attitude. From what I saw at the end of the first half before the All-Star break. He's a feisty guy. He seemed like a very, very feisty guy. We saw him multiple times on the sidelines, you know, coming off the bench almost to half court, you know, yelling at his players to run this play and all that kind of thing. I really like his attitude. Now, is he the long-run guy? I don't know. I honestly have to see more of him, and I would like to see the Pistons give him a chance as the season goes on. I will say this, though. As the trade deadline comes up pretty soon here, I do think they will make a big move. Well, maybe not a big move, but they will make a move that will shake up that starting lineup that they've been tinkering with for Lord knows how long. I don't think Greg Monroe, I think his days are limited with this team now. We've heard his name thrown out left and right as far as trade rumors go, and he even addressed it at one point at the beginning, at the middle of the season, at that first half of the season, saying, yeah, it makes it kind of hard to play when you hear your name on the trading block left and right. So those three will never be able to play together, Monroe, Drummond, and Smith. A move has to be made, and the odd man out is Greg Monroe. Let's be honest here, they're not getting rid of Andre Drummond. He's the franchise right now. He's that young star that Detroit is definitely harping on. He was the only one that we saw All-Star weekend and even was MVP. How about that? You talk a look at Smith, look at the deal they just gave him. They're not giving up. They're not breaking that and, you know, having to owe him money. The odd man out is naturally Greg Monroe. I would like to see Stucky go. Please answer my prayers. I don't think that's going to happen, but hey. But if do the Pistons make the playoffs? Yes, they make an exit in the first round, though, after the first round.
Well, if the Pistons make the playoffs, what do you think of this season? Will it be successful? If they make the eighth seed and they lose in the first round?
If they make the playoffs, it's successful comparing it to other seasons in the past. Let's be honest here. If they make the playoffs, it is a success. How you measure that success
and Dumar
can be
stays,
varied.
And Dumar stays.
Right. How you measure that success, you have to take a little, you know, some things into account here. You got to look at Joe Dumars and his tenure with this team. Depending on how they finish out this year, if it's a strong finish, if they barely make the playoffs, I think you have to look at those type of dynamics as well. If they make a strong push in here and really look good the second half of the season, I think Joe D might keep his job if they make a strong push in the second half. But if they just barely getting by like they were the first half of the season, I mean, there were games where they would lose two, lose three here, can't close out games, look terrible on defense. If they have that same look and barely make the playoffs, I think you could still possibly see Joe D in the lead. But let's be honest, if they make the playoffs, that's still a success compared, you know, it's the Pistons here.
Yeah, the end of the first half strong. So I don't know if they're really gonna topple over like they could, because I mean hot teams, especially in the NBA, we've seen it with winning streaks in the playoffs too. I mean, we've seen winning streaks carry over in the playoffs in years past. So I like it. What do you think, Matt?
I don't think it matters. I think if they make the playoffs, they're not going to do anything when they get there.
No, that's what I'm saying. They're out of the first round.
They're not good enough to beat any of the top teams in the East. There's only four teams in the Eastern Conference that are over 500. So it's not like making the playoffs is a huge accomplishment. They should make the playoffs. For the talent they have on the roster, it shouldn't even be a discussion at this point. They shouldn't be on the outside looking in. The reason that Mo Cheeks has gotten fired or got fired is because they were playing so poorly. They're out of the playoff picture at this point. I mean, they're behind Charlotte. Talk about inept franchises.
Brooklyn.
The Bobcats are ahead of them in the standings.
Yep.
That's ridiculous. Now, granted, they have a back-to-back
Bobcats
against
have
them
made some
this week.
Though.
And, yeah, they got Al Jefferson. But Al Jefferson isn't exactly, you know, a world beater when it comes to, you know, the NBA. He's not going to make your franchise instantly playoff contenders. He's a good scorer, sure. Doesn't do anything on defense, you know. Let's not talk about Al Jefferson. Let's talk about the Pistons, though.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see them being any more consistent than they were in the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can say that John Lawyer's energy will maybe push them in the right direction, but, you know, you still see them drop a game at Cleveland before the All-Star break. Cleveland is terrible. Cleveland has infighting in their own locker room. They have chemistry issues all over the place.
See,
and Detroit can't come together and beat them.
Right, and that's what it comes down to. You talk about those little – I mean, we've seen the Pistons have some impressive victories this season nonetheless. I mean, we've seen them beat the Heat. We've seen them push the Trailblazers to overtime and get beat by a buzzer beater. We've seen them, you know, push premier teams in the league to the brink.
Because they have premier talent.
Yeah, because they have premier talent. But we've seen them take nights off and get complacent, which I don't know how you can do that when you're the Detroit Pistons. But we've seen them do that and – you know, just drop games to just really bad teams in the league. And that's the problem. There has to be a standard set here.
That's where those Barkley comments come from.
Right.
You know,
right.
when you look at the right. talent on the roster and then you look at their record, it doesn't add up. I mean, you look at the teams in the East, they probably have top three, maybe four talent in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they're better than Chicago without Derrick Rose.
They're better than Chicago. I think they're – I don't know about Atlanta. They're better than Washington, I think. They're better than Brooklyn. They're better than the Bobcats.
I mean, they're better than a lot of those teams. Toronto is third in the East.
Yes, third
they're
in
like
the East.
Anti-Pistons right now because right. they don't have tons of talent, but the talent they do have is playing together and they're winning
done.
Games.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like this year I don't think they're going to have it. The big thing, I mean, the trade deadline's Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So if Joe Dumars is going to try and make a job-saving move, he's going to do it right now. And I don't see it. I just don't see it. I don't think that it's fair.
I think they're going to make a move.
They might. I don't know.
I think they will make
a
move.
It's kind of unfortunate that Greg Monroe is the odd man out simply because they just gave Josh Smith a big
right.
deal.
That's what I'm saying. Josh
that
Smith
should
has
make
this
a
huge
difference.
Deal. Yeah.
If you
That's
make a
is,
mistake,
though.
You should address the mistake, not right. just say, well, you know what? Our hands are tied because we paid this guy so much money. That seems like the wrong way to do
it. Yeah, because right now, naturally, it's just a natural thing that Greg Monroe is the odd man out. Now, if you had to reevaluate things, I mean, Smith is, like I said, he's totally overpaid. He's rolling in the dough right now. Totally overpaid. Smith is a guy who jacks up a lot of shots. He should be in the paint. And cause I think he has a solid post game when he's down there. When he's down there. But he loves that three-point line. And a lot of that has to do with the dynamic of Monroe and Drummond being down there. It just does not make for a great recipe, and when you look at that dynamics, he is just naturally the odd man out. I wouldn't see, you know, Smith leaving this team with
right.
the contract he has.
And the worst part is, I mean, the spacing concerns, the fact that you have three guys who have to play near the basket. I mean, that was the big red flag for the Pistons coming into the year,
yeah,
and they've
exactly.
done literally nothing to address it. So that's worrisome. I mean, that's another reason Mo Cheeks got fired. But it just seems like even if they make the playoffs, I don't think you can put a feather in their cap and say Detroit Pistons back in the playoffs. I don't think
so
it
you
matters.
Think either
I don't
way,
think it's an accomplishment at all.
You think either way Jody's getting fired here?
Yeah, unless they spring a big upset in the first round and maybe move to the semis or the Eastern Conference Finals, I think he's out.
I could see that. I could see it definitely either way. I mean, like I said, if the Pistons do somehow, you know, have this incredible push in the second half of the season, which they have the potential of doing. It's just about putting those things together and playing. I'm going to sound so cliche here. I sound like Larry Brown back in 04, but playing the right way, you know, playing, you know, the little things, defense, I mean, making right decisions on offense, I mean, rebounding, which I don't know how sometimes Detroit gets out rebounded with those three that you have down low. I don't understand it sometimes. If they go out there with mentality every night that they're playing the Indianas, Miamis, Oklahoma Cities of the league, they can definitely make a run here. Will they? Question marks everywhere. We will certainly see. All right, guys. Well, less than 2 minutes left here. Let's just wrap it up. Great show, man. I keep thinking about those national anthems. Those were so bad. But, hey, thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports. I want to remind you all that you can sign up to be a part of Current Sports TV as we tape tomorrow night at 6 p.m. I will be sitting down with St. John's wrestling coach, Derek Phillips. Yes, Derek has such a powerhouse over there, the St. John's Red Wings, as they try to go for a state title, folks, this week. Man, that's exciting stuff. You want to be a part of that live audience, do so by simply going to WKAR.org and following the links. Well, thanks to Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKAR, Aaron Young for engineering, Matt Lutke and Alex Shard, production assistants. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic Tuesday, and be easy, people.